welcome to episode 5 of Mama Tales. As always, I'm grateful that you are here and you have been enjoying the content so far. If this is your first time, welcome. This is a space where we get to learn from each other and grow together as parents. Today's episode is special. To celebrate Father's Day, I've decided to feature a story by one awesome dad, my husband. In his story, you will hear about his strong sense of family, his fears and ideas about being a girl dad, and an overall great person. I could be biased, but I think he's just the best, and this journey would look vastly different if he wasn't a part of it. Our daughter and him share a type of bond that I'm jealous of, one that I wish I had with my own dad. I loved my father so much. I just wish that he was more present to connect and bond, but for most of my life, he traveled for work. I lost him quite tragically in 2015, right after he had just settled down. And I don't think this is something that I have fully healed from yet. I get bouts of grief and sadness here and there, and that feeling that, you know, he would have been a great granddad, but unfortunately, he's not here. Anyways, this Father's Day, I think of him as I celebrate my husband for being the best dad that I know. I won't talk too much this time because I think we should just get right into his story. So let's take a listen. Today's storyteller is someone very close to my heart, my husband. This man has been by my side from the very, very beginning. We undertake this journey together every single day. We wake her up together and we take her to bed together. This has happened every day, I kid you not. So I'm very intrigued and curious to hear more about this journey through his eyes.
Hey guys, my name is Muruthi Thoita. I'm a husband to this beautiful Mama Taylor, full-time dad to KO, and software engineer by profession. I grew up in a big extended family. The families were not perfect, but they were great families, and it made such a great and lasting impression on me, and I wanted to share that with somebody later on down the line. And I grew really, really passionate about having a family of my own later on down the line. I have a feeling it has quite a bit to do with how, for example, I'm called Muruthi and my brother is called Mwangi. And during, you know, our family reunions, in the Muruthi side of the family, if you guys know a bit about Kikuyu culture, where I'm named after my grandfather and Mwangi is named after my grandfather as well on mom's side. Just the mere fact that I was called dad by my aunties and my uncles, and Mwangi was called dad by our aunties and our uncles on our mother's side, I think that had a sort of lasting impression on us, in the sense you felt very intertwined with the whole family in a big, big way. And I really wanted that for my children as well. So it's a deep thing, I'd say, and it's something that I've carried for a very, very long time. I'd say a big part of why I wanted to be a father is my African culture, is my Gikuyu culture, and, you know, just that idea of continuity and giving back what you are given, as in the life you're given, giving that to someone is a big part of why I chose to be a father. And it's a huge responsibility. I didn't appreciate it before I got KO, but it's a responsibility I'm willing to take. So from the onset, I did know that I was going to do this with somebody who I thought was the right fit for me. And yeah, Sally was that right fit. And for some reason, we did lock in perfectly. So Sally comes to the office, says she's in so much pain. Not typical of Sally to say she's in so much pain. If Sally says we need to go, we need to go. So we go to the hospital, which is quite close, thankfully. Take quite a bit of time, you know, signing in, have, you know, insurance, blah, blah, blah. But we finally see a doctor. They perform some few tests. By now, we didn't think it was pregnancy. What we then did was, you know, just sat down and waited. But for some reason, given we had done the lab tests and all, we had a feeling that, you know, this was something about Sally's womb. And we started getting that fear of, are we going to get babies or not? And it was, that was scary. It was very, very scary to have that idea that this thing that you've been waiting for is not going to happen. We look at the results, typical doctor mambo jambo, so it doesn't make sense to us. Start Googling some stuff, and then we see this cyst thing that we don't understand. So we search for that online, see that this is something that can cause complications in pregnancy, and that's when it goes off. We are like, you know, crazy. We are never going to have babies of our own. So we enter the examination room. The doctor is just, you know, reading through the results, very serious face, looking the other side. And then she decides that this is above her knowledge base. I think she was not a specialist in that said field, and tells us that she needs to get somebody else to come explain to us the results. So we are like, this must be really bad, by the way. How we get even more disappointed in one way or another. I could feel it myself. The specialist comes and goes through the results. Very, very nice lady. And she starts talking and talking in typical doctor fashion. So starts with like, you know, this is a cyst. It's usually something that didn't develop when you are growing, and it's still currently new. It might, you know, bring some complications during your pregnancy. By the way, do you guys know you're pregnant? So after that, I'd care less what she said. I felt so, so, so happy. I started thinking about, you know, all the, it all came back. The feeling of family, just wanting to have a family of your own. And I was starting that journey. I'd started it, you know, by marriage, but we are now getting somebody of our own in a sense. And it felt so, so, so good, I remember. And I don't know why, and I'm telling Sally this as we, for the first time as well, I had a feeling it was going to be a daughter. I don't know why. I've always known my first child was going to be a daughter. I'd grown up in a family of boys only, me and my younger brother. We didn't have sisters, and I always wanted a daughter for myself. But for one reason or the other, I'd have, you know, wanted her to not be the firstborn. And there are a few reasons for that. Given the world we live in, I'd have wanted an elderly brother figure that, you know, can just sort of protect my daughter. And I know how that sounds coming from me. But from the time I started eating mugure, which was, I'd say, 7 years before we got to this particular position in our lives, a lot had happened to mugure that seemed normal for her and totally out of place for me. So, for example, small things like, oh, today I was passing by the market and 16 guys catcalled me. I'm like, is that something that always happens? Why are you making that sound very, very normal? The uncomfortability you get as a lady strolling through life, just trying to do your thing, is so much, I'd say. Yeah, I'm obviously looking through it through Mugure's eyes, but I'd never appreciated them in one way or another. So that was also another huge eye-opener for me. And I know having a bigger brother would not solve everything for my beautiful daughter, but it's something. It's better than her facing the world by herself. But that's a heavy one for me, to be quite honest. And so I really wanted to have a son just because of that. But in hindsight, I know Keo as my daughter will grow up to be a very, very, very awesome person, and she'll be protected by not only us, but by herself as well, by the knowledge that we'll give her in one way or another. And she'll grow up to be protected by, you know, even forces that are beyond our understanding, if I may say so. And that's all I can, you know, pray for. But I do hope that the world can be a better place for women. And as it stands, it's not a good place for women, to be quite honest. And I know I'm talking from the outside looking in, but it, from my experiences, it's not. And I don't want a better scenario for my daughter. And I think it also raises a broader question of why the world is the way it is, in a sense, and the media we consume, does it create that idea that, you know, catcalling or having your way or all these nasty things that happen, does media normalize it? Does society normalize that? And as parents who are going to raise up both boys and girls and have to impact them that knowledge, I believe we should take a very, very hands-on approach in making sure that we impact the right knowledge. We make sure that we can confidently say that, you know, this is wrong and it's wrong for these reasons, and not just let it pass by that, you know, it's the way of the world. That's what boys tease girls. That's how it happens. And then something that just started as simple as it's just a tease, and then it's catcalling, and then before you know it, all these other things have to happen. And let's not normalize such things. There needs to be a huge respect for the parties, in a sense. And as parents, we should make sure that we are teaching our children the right things and we are consuming the right media as well. So I think media has a huge part to play as well. We were well prepared, or so we thought we were well prepared. So we had gone to bath class and had great support from that standpoint, in a sense. So these are the positions you need to take if you want to, you know, engage the baby. You need to know about the, you know, each and every little thing was discussed in bath class. And I'd highly encourage any couple that is going through the same, or any individual that is going through the same, to attend bath class, because it really, really helps just understanding what is happening with your body. So labor starts. Okay, so let's start a while back. So it's around May 8th. The due date for care was on May 10th. So Sally starts getting, you know, sort of like Braxton Hicks, but they're stronger. So we are like, after this, actually, what we'd call contractions, or is it something different? So the contractions start, and so we are like, you know, these are actually contractions. We are counting them. We are all excited, but for some reason, it just stops. And then we are like, okay. And it stops and never comes back for, you know, it's May 9th now, no contractions. May 10th, no contractions. May 11th, no contractions. So, yeah, man, that gave Sally a lot of pressure, because, you know, everyone is, personally, I'm like, you know, hey, babes, you're not feeling anything? And I can try to be as not want to ask as much as possible, but I really want to get this over and done with and get this baby here. In hindsight, I'd have done a better job just trying to settle everyone's nerves down, but for the first one, things just go crazy. So we just, you know, wait, we do what we need to do. We had this place in Westgate where we used to get red leaf tea, a lot of pineapples from some guy that sells them along the road. I think I bought like 5 pineapples. And Sally, I sat Sally down and she ate all those pineapples. She hated me for that. So, story for another day. So, it's May 15th. I've just settled in to bed. Sally comes, you know, says, the time is now. I can't believe it. Or I could believe it, but I didn't want to have the experience we had in May 8th where nothing happened and yet something had started. So tried to, you know, downplay it just so that we don't have to, you know, go through the same thing that that had happened. And then it continues. We try to sleep just so that we can see, you know, if this thing is actually going to continue by itself. But it still continues. And by now, Sally's water had broke just a bit. And clearly the signs were there that this is actually it. So I can't remember the detail, the nitty-gritties of how that whole thing went. But what I remember is we did wake up at, in the middle of the night, I'd say around 4, 5 a.m., and came to the sitting room, actively contracting. So I'm really helping with, you know, things like just the positions we learned in birth class, just trying to reenact them at home so that she's as comfortable as possible and helping her in any way possible. And, you know, thinking about everything as well. Do we have our bag in place? How do we go to the hospital if need be? And yeah, we end up going to the hospital at 9 a.m. Sally has dilated 3 centimeters and it's good. We at least, you know, we have something to work to. So we get into the labor room. Let's continue. Let's get these three centimeters to 10 centimeters and get KO here. So we go into the labor room, start our, you know, exercises, all the positions we can think about. Sally's pacing around as well. I believe that, you know, this was my part to play, and I was going to play it well. For I was going to make sure that I did my part in making sure that, you know, this baby came to be. And if I needed to make Sal do lunges because she needed to do lunges, we'd do that. So the day continues. I'd say it's around 5 p.m. now. That's when we started inducing the labor, right? And nothing has moved. You know, it's 5 p.m. already. We are supposed to be at least 5, I'd say even, just give us 5 centimeters so that we see something is moving, but nothing is moving. And the beautiful plan we had in place is clearly coming into shambles. Something I'd also like to point out is just also when writing down your plan, don't look at the best case scenario only. Also look at these other edge cases as well, since you don't know what might happen when you get into labor. And there are a lot of, I'd say, things that might happen when you're getting into labor. So 5 p.m. to 9 p.m., still 3 centimeters. So clearly this is not working. I wish we had been at home. That's a big wish I'd have wanted. And I know Sally would have wanted as well, just because of the comfortability it gives you. And I was very, very pro the whole home birth kind of situation. And Sally was not for it, in a sense. And I'd like us to talk about that. But I respected that this wasn't, as I was, you know, I was the coach. Would I say I was the coach? I'd say I was the support staff. And Sally was, you know, the player and the whole team. So as a support staff, I needed to know my place, in a sense. So, yeah. So, and I think she made the right call, given she had that intuition, that motherly intuition that I really respect. She knew she needed to be in the hospital and not at home doing this fully. So what I just wanted to get out is that intuition of doing that, what you needed for KO to get here was a hospital, whereas it might be different for somebody else. I just, the appreciation of intuition is something I think we need to do on a day-to-day basis. Like the same intuition I had knowing that it's actually going to be a daughter. So that intuition, okay, sometimes it might be wrong, sometimes it might be right, but when you feel something strongly, just go with it, I'd say. Yeah, trust your gut. So it's 9 p.m., our doctor comes in, says that, you know, we need to perform a CS since nothing is moving on. So I feel a lot of fear now, given it's not as if I wasn't feeling fear before, but, you know, now it's a surgery. It's not what I'd say what we had planned to do. But at the end of the day, I know it's the right thing to do, given that's where, as it stands, nothing is sort of moving on. So she's taken into the theater. I can't join her, so I'm waiting outside. So I'd say I started waiting from 9:30 since she entered. So I'm waiting, not patiently, but I'm waiting. And from 9:30 till 10:34 when Kia was born, that was, I'd say, the longest 1 hour of my life. Because I'm wondering, is everyone going to be okay? Is Sally, most importantly, going to be okay? is Keo going to be okay? And by turn 34, I had Keo cry from afar. Keo being Keo, Keo has to announce to this world that she has arrived. Keo has a huge set of lungs in her and she always wants to use them. She's very opinionated. So I hear the cry. I think it might be her, but I don't want to make that assumption. But after a few minutes, she's wheeled in by the pediatrician, looking so beautiful. The first thing I remember saying was, you know, she has Sally's nose. And I, for some reason, I didn't see all the similarities we had with her. I don't know why. Could be because she was also tired and it shows on her face when she, because she comes out, babies, newborns come out very, very puffy due to the tiredness of, you know, that whole labor experience. So I think maybe I was also tired as well. It could be either or. And I didn't appreciate that at first. I appreciated that the next day. But, you know, she's here, well and good. How is my wife doing? And it was quite scary, not knowing what is going on, in a sense. You know, this is nothing planned. It was an emergency CS, as they put it. And I remember we took Keo to the nursery, well and good. I called my parents. They came quite fast, actually, since the hospital is not too far from where we live. Also saw Keo very, very excited. But for me, I wasn't feeling comfortable until I saw Sal. And it's no use having this beautiful baby if you don't have the person you created her with next to you. And right now, like, I had no part to play, you know, at least in the labor experience. You have a part to play. You can, you know, do the lunges and do everything and help her with that. But for this, it was totally the doctors and Sally. And there's a lot of fear in the unknown. That's what I'd say. So when they finally wheeled her back to her labor room, so that was, I think, at around 11:30, I'd say. So it's already another longest hour of my life. Another one just after I had a long hour of my life. I was so relieved to just see her. It was nice having my moms around, but it would have been better if, you know, I had a friend of mine around, you know, even my brother, I'd say, just around for that whole experience. Just having somebody, you know, who can just calm you down in such a scenario where you don't have any control. I think the idea is just, given you don't have the control, you're handing over the control to the doctors, you're handing over the control to an external party. Having somebody you can, you know, just rely on, just to, who knows you, who can calm you down, goes a long way. So, yeah, that's something I'd really advise anybody getting into this and who wants to support their partner. Have somebody who can support you as well. Baby's here, Sally as well. I'm happy. I preferred meeting her together. It was only fair. So maybe part of me not wanting to meet her. So a bit of context in regards to that. So I'm meeting her the second time. You are meeting her the first time, right? And for me, the first time felt a bit unnatural, I'd say. Given in our original birth plan, the idea was, you know, we'd meet her together and Sally would have skin and skin time with her. So when I saw her alone, it felt as if I know how much Sal would have loved to be here for this. And in hindsight, I think what I was feeling was more like, I shouldn't be doing this if Sally is not here, in a sense. It's as if I was cheating on Sally. So that's why I didn't savor the moment as much for the first time as I did for the second time. Now, given it's both of us, we are looking at her. I remember since Sally was on the bed, Keo was on her cot. I was, you know, just looking at her, so beautiful with her two hands and everything. So I hand Keo to Sally. So she like opens up her face and then she has this way she sucks her thumb or something or touches her eye. Yeah, she was so cute. And, you know, it's a totally new person and you have to know one another, in a sense. So it's more like it's like introductions time, and it's, hey, my name is Kionjeri and I am 0 days old. And yeah, I like touching my eye with my finger, even though that's totally wrong. We had started bonding with her. And it wasn't, I wouldn't say it's love at first sight and, oh, you feel connected from the onset. No, I'd say it's more like, you know, for me anyway, it was more like, yeah, let's know one another and let's see where this takes us. And that's when we noticed that she looked really like me. I also didn't expect that to happen, but to be quite honest, I never minded it. Even right now, I feel so overwhelmed by the idea that of meeting Kyo the first day. In hindsight, that was such a beautiful moment. But given how tired we were, I don't think we appreciated it much then as we do now. As I said, we are getting to know Kyo. Kyo is getting to know us. Kyo has never been in this world. So she has been in a warm place where she gets food via placenta. And now she's getting food via mommy's boob. And before you can connect all those dots, before she can get comfortable enough to, you know, just be, there's a lot of friction there. That's what I do. There's just a lot of friction there. And what did we struggle with the most? We struggled with everything. Everything. It didn't help that we had labored for 24 hours nonstop and hadn't slept. I'd say Sally hadn't slept. I wish we got her some time to sleep, but nobody prepares you for that. But I wish, you know, Kyo was in the maternity room and not in your room for at least one day so that you get just that, you know, good night's sleep. In hindsight, it's okay that we struggled with her since I'd say we all grew stronger from that. We didn't grow weaker from that. We didn't break from that. We grew stronger. So I remember changing her nappies was hard. I remember breastfeeding was hard. I remember getting her to sleep the first few days. Oh my God. Ay, ay, ay. Ay. Thank God we now have a child who we just put into bed and she just sleeps. I remember when we started first doing that, my God. We can't take that for granted. Tumetoka mbali time. And I appreciate the support that we had from our parents and all the people that were around us to just tell us, you know, it's not going to be forever. It's like, you know, you're not going to be in this place forever. It gets better with time. I remember those words vividly. Fourth trimester, I'd say, was the hardest bit for us, in a sense. Getting to know Kyo, getting to know who she is, what she wants. Because, you know, she's a human individual by herself. She wants to sleep at this certain time. She wants to eat this way. She doesn't want to feel cold. Appreciating that and learning that and also knowing what to give her at the right time. It's something that comes with time. She just doesn't come from the tummy and it's natural. And I don't know how it's going to be with our second one. We might say we are prepared, but given everybody is different, beautifully so, in the sense that, you know, Kyo's sister or brother will be a different person. We don't know. Maybe the brother or sister will be sleeping the whole day and, you know, easy to deal with, but we don't know how that will be. And just appreciating that, I think we'll go a long way in our second one, in our third one, and our fourth one.
Okay. Fana used to be the one who was great at burping. He, like, had a master's degree. He was also the one who could calm her down to sleep. Fana is also the one who helped her sleep independently. Because what would happen is that, and I think we started this after she was 3 months old, I stopped breastfeeding at night. So I'd pump milk and then go to sleep at, I think, 8 p.m. so that I get enough sleep and to wait for her when she wakes up during the night. But he would stay up a little bit later and then feed her, wake her up and feed her bottle feed her and then just simply put her back to bed. She wouldn't even cry. She would just be put in bed and would sleep. And I remember the first few mornings I would wake up and be like, she just slept like that. So I was very convinced that that could only happen during night sleeps. But then when I would leave the house during the day and not be able to make it back in time for nap times, Fana would have already put her to bed. So he's the one who unlocked our sleep, our sleep patterns. So he has a master's degree in dealing with little kids.
Personally, I think, I don't know how much of that is based off luck or being in the right place at the right time. They say sometimes that's what you need in life, just being in the right place at the right time. And a lot of luck. I'd say it's mostly based off that because, for example, the burping thing, you know, at the end of the day, as a father, you don't have, you know, a boob, which is the primary way that, you know, an infant will feed. So at the end of the day, I need to play my part, and my part needs to be everything else other than that. And I have to, and I need to give as much in. And for me, burping and rocking her to sleep, bottle feeding her, I loved bottle feeding her. I was a bit apprehensive at first, given I was like, there's some comfort she gets from the boob. But when I started doing it, it was quite nice. Like, you know, we bonded at that time as well. So I would say I was more lucky, Sally, to be quite honest. And I didn't know that when I was placing her in bed, that was going to be how you are going to unlock her sleep. I was lucky. That's what I'll say. I was lucky and I was in the right place at the right time. And I was doing my best to support my family at the same time. At the end of the day, what matters most for me is my family and supporting them in any way possible. COVID was that blessing in disguise for us, one way or another. So even professionally for me, having my own space, I noticed by working from home, I can work better. I had a clearer mind working from home. And I noticed quite quickly that, you know, this working from home thing is quite, it's a vibe. And it's very productive in a sense. So, and not only that, I could stay with my wife and interact with her through the day. There's a lot of importance I place to that, especially culturally. If you're looking at an African perspective, the home is where everything used to happen. It was the center per se. And as it stands right now in this modern life, the office is actually the center of everything. We spend a half of the day for some people in the office. And having an opportunity where you can actually live at home and interact with these people at home in a day in, day out perspective is powerful, because there is no other way where you build bonds other than actively taking time and being very, very conscious about the time you take with people. That's the only way you create bonds. And I believe that strongly. And if you're going to spend most of your day in the office in such a scenario, I'd never, for example, be seeing Keo, given she wakes up at 7 and sleeps at 7. If I'm going to be at the office at that same time, I'd never interact with her as I interact with her right now. And I'm filled with a lot of love when I see Keo. And that love, I believe, is not only generated by me being her father, the mere fact that I am her father, because there are a lot of people who are fathers but would care less about their children. But I believe it's created more by actively looking for moments where you interact together with your daughter. And there's a lot to say about remote work and working from home that encourages that bonding. And moving forward, I know these are discussions we have actively with Sally. Like, you know, do we really want to go back to work actively in physical spaces? If first I'm going to waste that time traveling to the office, I'm also going to burn a lot of fuel. You know, I don't have an electrical car yet. Do we need to be in the office? Can't we work at home? And I'm thankful my career has afforded me that. I'm thankful Sally's career has afforded her that. You know, I can't wait to see who Keo is going to be growing up. I already know, have a feeling of who she is right now and the things I hope she'll never drop. Her opinionatedness, her confidence, her happiness, and giving life to another is a gift that I pray that you enjoy as well. It's a huge responsibility, don't get me wrong, but it's a great responsibility, I'd say. And maybe something else is just, you know, I can't also wait to see the other siblings we bring Keo. It's going to be a huge responsibility for us, impacting knowledge, impacting love, impacting all these various things that we need to do as parents. But it's a journey I want to take. I don't career success if I don't have family success. For me, family always comes first. That's where I am. That's my story personally. And I just want to share it in the best way that I'd have wanted to share it. And I feel as if Mama Tales has been the perfect medium for that. And thank you, Sally, for giving me this opportunity. I know I'm more of a Baba Tales than a Mama Tales, but I've loved every minute of this. And to all dads out there, support your wives, support your partners, and it's a beautiful experience to be in.
That was a really great, fun episode to record. I truly loved taking a sneak peek into his mind and thought process. So super grateful that he was game to be part of this. Actually, he's the one who insisted for the longest time. So I'm glad that we finally got around to doing it. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there who do all that they can for their family. We truly, truly appreciate you. So if you'd like more content around this podcast and just general mom life, please follow me on Instagram at Sally Mogore. I'll leave the details below. If you want to share something on this platform, please feel free to contact me either on Instagram DM or on email at mamatillspod@gmail.com. I'll leave all those details down below. Oh, and in other news, we took the trip to Atamu that I was talking about last episode. It was beautiful, it was restful, and baby Keo had the time of her life just walking around, exploring, and literally just bathing in sand. I'll break down the trip a little more in detail, especially if you're thinking about traveling with a little one, on Instagram. All right, you have a great week, day, night, depending on when you get to listen to this episode, and I will catch you later on the next one. Bye.